Hello, I'm Stephen Goodwin. It's Tuesday, April the 8th, and welcome to episode number 20 of The Beer Crate, a podcast for ale lovers the world over. Each week, we'll be looking at the world of beer and brewing, investigating local, national, and international breweries, and of course, tasting a wide selection of beers, ales, and ciders. Lager boys need not apply. Coming off today's show, we have news, a drinker's diary, a history of wheat beer, the first of our two-part interview with Rudolf Delove Kosfaren, quick tastings, and our world-famous Try Before You Die section. So let's get cracking. News. And it was 50 years ago today that Shropshire Hills were officially recognised as an area of outstanding natural beauty. And so in celebration, the Winstanstow-based Wood Brewery has created Shropshire Hills Beauty in its honour. And so this isn't seen as a pure PR stunt, they're donating 5p from every pint to charity. Pear cider may soon be appearing on draft, thanks to a move by gamers. Their new pear cider is planned to appear from their specially created super chilled pumps that can also supply their more traditional cider. And while we at the Beer Crate don't do competitions, we know someone that does. InBev. In support of their Chang beer, they're offering a trip to Thailand to experience it firsthand. It's a prize draw, so it basically involves you registering your details with their marketing department. Drinker's Diary. And there are four festivals for you this time. The first is in Coventry, from the 11th of April to the 12th of April for Coventry Beer Festival. This takes place at Coventry Rugby Club. The second is the East Anglia Beer Festival, running from the 23rd of April through to the 26th of April. This is at the Corn Exchange, Bury St Edmunds. The 32nd Farnham Beer Exhibition, not festival note, is taking place from the 24th of April to the 26th. This is at Farnham Maltings, Bridge Square, Farnham in Surrey, and there's limited admission by ticket only, £6 per session. And Chippenham Beer Festival takes place on the 25th of April at the Olympiad Chippenham. The History of Wheat Beer. No one is quite sure when wheat beer began, but cereals like wheat were certainly more prominent in olden times. Old clay tablets dating from about 4000 BC have been found that shows two women drinking a beer. It consequently seems likely that the beer being drunk was a wheat beer, or at least something very similar. Modern wheat beer is said to begin around 1520, when Hans Sigmund of Degenberg was given the right to produce wheat beer for the area in and around Bavaria Forest. This right continued through the 1500s, even when the law forbid it, since by 1567 Duke Maximilian had taken over, and being a prince was exempt from certain laws. It wasn't until the 1700s that the barrier to entry was lowered, and others joined the party, allowing Bavaria to become the home of wheat beer that it is today. Wheat beers go by a couple of different names, such as Weissbier in Germany and Witbier in Belgium, but they are generally brewed using top fermentation and can be brewed the whole year round. Some use barley in addition to wheat, and the main brands are things like Erdinger Weissbier and Hoegaarden. To learn more about the process and technicalities of wheat beer, refer back to episode 14, where we covered these aspects more fully. This week sees the start of our two-part interview with Rudolf Delove Kosfaren. So Rudolf, tell us about yourself and the role of the brewers of Europe.
Good morning, my friend. Thank you very much for coming over to the European capital of Brussels. I know that very British said what a journalist from Brittany is going to do in Brussels, but I think all Europeans are very welcome to Brussels because there is bad things coming out of Brussels, but there is also good things coming out from Brussels and from the European Union. My name is Rudolf Delove Kosfaren. I am the chief executive of the European Brewing Confederation. What does it mean to be the chief executive of the Brewing Confederation? I would say it in two words. I am the ambassador and the voice of 98% of the brewers in Europe. Then I'm here to listen, to help them on everything that comes from the European Union or the international organization, like the World Trade Organization or the World Health Organization.
So what is your involvement with the World Trade Association?
If you talk about the World Trade Association, it's a question of barrier of trade. My job is to try to facilitate as much as possible the moving from the good from one country in Europe to another country out of the European Union, because very often there is barrier of trade, there is taxes, there is kind of administrative issues that are difficult, paperwork, and my job is to try to simplify it and to make it easier for the brewers to export their beer inside the European Union, because sometimes there is also kind of barrier inside, but certainly more outside the European Union in the world. And as you know, the European beer are very recognized in the world, and everybody in every part of the world are exciting to get the beer at the best condition and the best possible price. That's my job, to facilitate that.
With so many countries in Europe being known for producing beer, England, Germany, Netherlands and Belgium being perhaps the best known, are there any surprises with smaller countries being involved in beer production?
Yes. I must say, yesterday I was in Malta, the Isle of Malta. They are very dynamic. I was just participating to the inauguration of a new distribution center, but a distribution center not only targeted towards the island itself, but towards other parts of the world, and very dynamic. The President of the Republic was there to welcome this new distribution center. President was, by the way, the European Head of State of the Year last year. He's a very important person. And there was also the bishop over there. Then it's really something part of the cultures of a small island, Malta, who's got great idea. We produce good beer. We've done it for many, many years. By the way, the brewer was the first really made industry in the island of Malta before others came. You see that there is a long tradition. And being an island far away from everything is what can we do to export. And they take the initiative to invest millions of euros into a distribution and production center. Then you can see that Europe is the land of beer. Just when you produce a beer of quality, the world is open to you. It's up to you, and our job is to try to facilitate it as much as possible.
So any other surprises?
I should say that I have no surprise at all, because at the exception, that's maybe the best way to put it, of two countries, which is Andorra and Monaco, there is beer producing in every single country in Europe. I have a doubt maybe with Liechtenstein, but they've got the problem for the time being. But I think in every single country in Europe, beer is part of the culture. I mean, France, we always talk about the wine. The wine is absolutely super delicious. It is Bordeaux or Bourgogne or south of France. But there is more and more brews in France. The tradition of beer in the north of France and in the east, in Alsace, is a long, long-root tradition. But we see that there is more and more smaller family brewers who are opening in different parts of France than a country which is wine by long tradition and culture. Now is becoming more and more beer. Why? Because beer is very innovative. They can create innovation. People like to get their niche beer into their own local restaurant, into their own local pub. And that's part of the life that can be created by the beer.
You've recently been involved with work on packaging and labelling. Can you tell us something about that?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a very, very important issue to discuss, because we suppose that if you are a good businessman, if you are a good beer producer, you don't want to hide any corner to the consumer wish to be informed. But on the other side, our product exists for between 5 to 10,000 years old. The way of producing, except some ingredient, has not changed much. It's still done with the four major products, for which I include water for 90-92% of the beer. Then there is no very big secret, very big surprise into knowing what is the content of the beer. But if the consumers wants to get more information, I think the best thing we can give them, and I think we have to give them, is to inform of what they want to see on the labeling. And that's what we are working on nowadays. I know there is always coming from the European and other part of the world, we want more and more and more information. But the European Union did a study in 2005, everything, washing machine, sausages, plants, whatever, what kind of information do you want to see on the different products? And concerning the wine and the beer, they wanted two things, the brand and the content of alcohol, you see. But that doesn't mean that we should not give more. But I think we should have first to see whatever they want, what are they interested, if they are going to read it. Because if we put a Bible on the labeling, nobody will read it in small. It's like the insurance on the other side of your contract, you see. The writing is so small that you cannot read.
So how does the labelling of beer compare to the labelling of other products, such as cornflakes?
Yes, yes. First of all, the cornflakes, I'm sure, exist for a long time, but not for 5 to 10,000 years of time. Secondly, there is an enormous variety of different cornflakes. There is different variety of beer, but most of the time, they are not with the four basic ingredients. Sometimes they are in this country, they can add berries. I've tasted very good British beer when they put honey. tomatoes, natural products. All those products are coming from the land and the agriculture, even berries or whatever, cherries.
Perhaps if they included all their ingredients, they'd never get past the German purity law.
Even Germany, I mean, you don't ask me the question, but if you ask me the question, how many brewers, independent brewers exist in Europe, there is more than 3,000 independent brewers in Europe. That's a lot. Great majority, of course, in Germany, which is a very nice and long tradition country, beer country, but in many countries. I was talking about France before. 4 years ago, the French Brewing Association got 15 members, 14 or 15 members. Now they have around 70 members of the association. That means all newcomers, small family brewers, who start to say, well, yes, but we need a brewery there, we need a brewery over there. Even in the wine region, like Bordeaux, they've got a brewery now.
So working with brewers in Europe, do you work with the countries or the brewers directly?
That's a very good question. Our members are the members of 25, nearly 26, Brewing National Association. That our members are the national country. And the national countries have got the brewers as a member. That I'm like a pyramid, that's why it's not called an association, it's called a confederation. A confederation is an association of association. Then the brewers of Europe are on the top of the pyramid. Afterwards, there is the national association, which are direct members. And behind that, there is, of course, the producers of beer. But you see, we have got direct link with the producers of beer, because in all our committees and working group or task force, we work with those people who are producing beer. And in our board, we have got the four representatives of the major global brewers, which is Heineken, Carlsberg, Scottish and Newcastle, and InBev. And on the other side, parallel to that, we have four chief executives of small family brewers, and on the top, the president, to put peace. But there is peace between, there is unity and peace between the big and the small brewers. They are all competitive, but they respect each other, and that's very important. Each one in his own ground. A major brewers know that he's not going to be flexible enough to produce a very local beer for two or three villages or even for a pub. But on the other side, the major brewers know that the same quality of beer can be found in 20, 40 different countries. Then there is a good mixture between the two, and there is certain unity in association. There is not only members of the European Union, because the Europe doesn't stop at the European Union. There is countries who just joined the European Union, and many who hasn't yet joined, but we've got Switzerland, we've got Norway, we've got Turkey as the members of the Brewers of Europe. That means that we are open to Europe, not only to the European Union.
Now, I know the Brewers of Europe is funded by subscription by these groups, but there's also special reports that are often paid for by the breweries themselves. Do you ever worry about the bias in those reports?
Yes, I mean, all those reports are always done by independent, big consultant. If you ask Ernst & Young, if you are Pricewaterhouse, those people know very well that they should not having a report which is buying from one side and diminishing the importance of the other side. If not, they are not credible. It's done by independent, it's controlled by the brewers of Europe, and I would say it's over controlled also by all the brewers.
You also promote regional beer in Brussels, don't you?
Yes, yes. We are proud of the beer culture, the local and regional beer culture. I think what is exciting with beer is that beer is not a huge box. There are different boxes, different tradition, and I think it's important that when the regional brewers wants to come in Brussels to look, to meet their members of parliament or the civil servant, this house, which is their house, it's not the house of the Brewers of Europe, is the house of all the members of the Brewers of Europe, that this house welcomed them and the guests they want to invite him. And I think that's the role of the European Brewing House, is to be an open house. It's a club for the members to come when they want, to get the help they want from us. And I'm very proud of that, because that's create unity again. It is a small brewer who wants to get his general assembly, which we're meeting here, people who never come to Europe for one reason or another, because the majority of their members are small members. They will come here in Brussels, we will explain them what we do, what is the value for the money they pay to all of us. And I think it's important that they see that they trust us. Coming in Brussels, in their house, they know the house is open to them, it's an added value for them and for us.
With all these breweries from all these countries, there's bound to be conflicts. They can't really be best friends.
I don't say they are best friends. They are competitors. But they respect each other. There is a big difference. The major brewers are respecting their competitors, but they also respect the smaller brewer. They know very well that the smaller brewer add a very important card to the value of their own business. That means diversity, innovation, creativity, and those innovation, creativity, very often on the production of beer comes from the smaller brewers because they are more flexible, they are more inventive. The big ones are more for big numbers. I don't say that the quality of beer is not good. The quality of beer is very, very good. But the creativity comes most of the time from the smaller brewers. And that's good for the image of the whole beer.
So what are the current problems you're facing?
Oh, yes, I think that there is, when you are talking about confederation, you cannot hide anything. Everything is public. I have no hidden corner for you, no hidden question to you. But certainly one thing that we spend more of our resources, most of our time, most of our money, is the social responsibility of the brewers vis-à-vis those people who don't drink the way they should. That means those people who misuse beer or abuse beer. And that's between 5 to 10%, depending on the country. But that's a great number of people. And abuse is a common enemy for our members, for the producers, also for the society, for the politician, for the parents to educate their children. I think we have to work together, find out what can we do to stop people, or as much as possible, because we will never be able to stop all of them. But what can we do to stop the young people who drink and then drive, the young people which are violent at home, the young people who drink too much, be drinking, and those kind of issues. Those kind of issues are hurting us as producers, and we have to find also what are the solutions on our side. The solutions are very, very often a code of conduct. Don't put some excitement with beer to young people. Don't show young people who will drink beer and then drive, going to the ski, or having a sex appeal, or whatever. I think we must respect those codes. Those codes are developing in every single country, members of the Brewers of Europe, more and more, and we must be credible. That means if a brewer put his signature at the bottom of a code of conduct, he'll have to respect it. We always say that if a law is voted, a legislation, they are not so involved because legislation is global, is far away. But when they put their signature, their own responsibility, they have to respect it. And they should have a system of compliance. They should have a system of sanction if they don't respect it. They should have a system of information. Timing, that means if there is a break in the code of conduct, in the contract, the consumer should be informed very quickly. First of all, where he could phone, where he could call, and to get a solution to his problem. Then all that is important. When you sign, you have to respect your signature. That's why we always say that legislation is very often not the best alternative. The best alternative is code of self-regulation and respect of the code by the brewers. Who are responsible are those brewers who sign it.
As far as lobby groups go, the best known in the UK is probably Canva. Do you have any dealings with them?
I like it. I like Canva. I will tell you the truth. We have very, very close relations. Why? Because they are beer lovers. Beer lovers, and beer lovers from very, very small local brewery to the big one. They are really amateurs. They look at each other. And by the way, they've got a European organization. But the very dynamic are the British and the Danish. I think they are the two more dynamic countries. And we have very close relations and very positive relations. Because as you say, they have also a message of moderation. Let's drink a beer, but let's do it in a fair way. And we are together on that. And I think also they are promoting good traditional beer, who needs to be promoted. They keep beer alive, and that's important. Also, it's up to us maybe to help them to see, because they are beer lovers and things like that. But we have also to, that's why relations are so important, and close relation with them is important, because we have to, there is limit of things that you can do and things that you cannot do. If there is not a code for camera, I think it's our duty to tell them, yes, but there is a code for beer producers that you should look after, you should be informed and respected, even with your own messages.
Quick tastings. In this section, we give a brief yet discriminating summary of a number of different beers from around the world. All have been personally tasted and graded. Naturally, everyone has different tastes, and these are mine, so your mileage may vary. Brand Ertop from Brand. Brand is one of the biggest and best breweries in the Netherlands, with several beers available from most bars in the country. The Ertop is their original recipe pils, with a mild hop on the tongue and a taste which strengthens in the aftertaste. It's more watery than a standard pils, despite the 5.5% alcohol tag. It's good, but I give it 6.5 out of 10. Brand Old Brown, also from Brand. This is a brown ale, as the name suggests, and comes in a rather light 3.5%. It has a light malt taste, followed by a strong aftertaste of hop and honey. All the tastes do pull together in the final throes, and it has many touches of a malt-light kind of beer, so if that's your style, you'll definitely agree with an 8 out of 10 on this one. Brand Imperator. Another brand beer, this one being their amber offering, coming in at 6.5%. It has a rich, rounded taste, but one that dissipates far too quickly for this level of expectation, particularly because of, or maybe despite of, its mild CO2 content. 7 out of 10. Schefferhofer Hefeweizen by Binding Brauery, part of the Otteker Group. This is an amber colour wheat beer with an interesting sweet apple and citrus aroma. Taste-wise, it's a straightforward wheat beer with a tang of fruit that I've been told is green banana, so it's akin to a Belgian fruit beer in this respect. There's not much of an aftertaste here, which is fortunate considering the amount of fruit present. It's 5% and 8 out of 10. Try Before You Die. In this section of the show, we will cast a discerning eye over the best beers that this world has to offer. We shall mention its history, the brewery behind the beer, and why we feel this is a superior brew worthy of your attention. This week, Brand Pils from Brand. This is a brewery we've featured a lot this week, due mainly to my trip to Maastricht last month, and being able to drink lots of the stuff. Brand is a Dutch brewery and was founded in 1871 by the Brand family in Gulpenwittem, after buying the oldest brewery in the Netherlands, founded in 1340. It has since been sold again to Heineken, but the family is still in charge. Despite being a pils and from Heineken, the Brand pils has a good hoppy taste, which flows through into the aftertaste. It's clean and pleasant, and suffers none of the problems you might associate with beers of this kind. It is, in effect, a pils with some bite and some solid interest, making it one of the few lagers the real ale zealots would like to try. And it's not dissimilar to Pilsner Urquell in this respect. Brand produces 8 beers, including their seasonals. In addition to the ones we've featured already this week, there's Brand Cuvée, Maibock, Double Bock, and Sylvester, the latter 3 being the specials for spring, autumn, and winter, respectively. Brand is almost unknown outside of Holland, with only Brand Pils making an occasional appearance overseas, usually being sold as Royal Brand Beer. But if you're in the area, it's worth looking up. This is one of the few Pilsners I've found that can actually change your opinion of what a lager beer can be. That is, something with a unique and definable taste. And that's why it wins this week's Try Before You Die. Okay, that wraps it up for this week. To give us a tasting of your opinions, you can email us on thebeercrate@gmail.com. If you prefix the subject line with 2 colons, you can be sure to avoid the spam filters. Remember to enjoy everything from the Beer Crate safely and responsibly, so you can be back here with us next week. Until then, cheers. Has been released under the Creative Commons Attribution, No Commercial, No Derivatives version. See www.thebeercrate.com for details.